I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. All right, today I want to welcome Deanne Palin. She is the founder and CEO of On Point Business Solutions. Deanne helps CEOs and growing companies scale through strategic HR leadership, leadership coaching, and operational excellence. And she is one of a couple people that I've met in the HR space that just really have a passion and a belief that HR should be a growth lever in your business, not a necessary evil. And so, Deanne, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So we'll talk about that later, because I think a lot of people see HR as like the school marm who's, you know, out rapping people on the knuckles with a ruler saying you can't do that. But we'll dig into that a little bit later. But you were telling me a story earlier about, you know, you haven't always been in the fractional world. You were inside big corporate. Tell me a little bit about that.
I spent the first 15 years of my life running HR departments for big companies, Target, Motorola, helped privatize an insurance agency into an A-rated company. To be honest, and maybe this is a secret I shouldn't tell, but I hated HR. I absolutely hated it. And so I rushed back and got my MBA, change management certification, project management certification, and I started running operations. And I love cleaning up messes and building companies and turning things around. And I just found that I loved that. And so it was about 2014, I was head of operations for the Phoenix Suns and in a horrible marriage. And I quit both in the same week. And wow. I started On Point Business Solutions. So that was the first time I had ever quit anything in my life. And so, I made a declaration, say no to jerks, right?
Yeah, I was going to ask. So you wake up one morning, you're just like, hey, I'm bored. I'm just going to quit my job, quit my marriage. Or what was there some impetus?
There was a lot of years leading up to that, you know, especially on the marriage front. It was not a good one. And in fact, it was the opposite of good. And I had two young girls, 10 and 12. X was diagnosed, you know, narcissist sociopath. And I was working in an environment that was really, really unhealthy. And I have a strong character. And in both fronts, I was not living my values and living the life I knew I wanted to represent for my girls and the clients that I work with and the support. And so it was a plan. I mean, I did it both in the same week, but I didn't think of it and do it in the same week. I had a plan and a methodology to that, but it was really about getting back to who I am as a person.
Yeah. Well, and so I guess let me just clarify this. I mean, anybody that works for a company, they have some critiques of the company, because there's no perfect company, because companies are made up of people who are sure. also imperfect.
And that's job security for me, by the way.
that's a good point. That's a good point. Because I don't know. I want to pull on that a little bit. Tell me, explain that.
Well, you know, I have to show up. Most of my CEOs say running a company would be so easy if I didn't have employees, right? It's painful to manage the emotional wherewithal of all of the issues that go on. And, you know, we're all little kids in big people's bodies, right? And so when something upsets you, you throw that same tantrum you threw when you were five. And it doesn't matter if you're a CEO or the front desk receptionist, that stuff shows up at work. And I worked in so many executive teams in corporate America, and I'm surrounded by peers. I used to joke all the time that it's alphabet soup. Every one of us has OCD, ADHD, you know, some version of something. That's most of the successful people, you know, are diagnosed. And so I hated HR. I told you that. And what I realized is that if you can fix or at least stabilize the people side of the business, there's so much money that runs out of the back end of a company that we don't even see. And it's lost productivity, it's lost opportunity with customers, it's turnover, it's payroll expenses, it's overtime, it's all kinds of levers that have to do with people. And you know, I help companies prepare for sale. I geek out on that. I love it. And when I'm working with companies and I look at their margins and I'm like, you are losing massive margin on your people issues. Let's fix those and get you more money when you sell this baby.
So yeah, and I went back up a little bit back to the whole the fact that people are broken is good business for you. I don't feel like that's totally clear yet. What's why are broken people good business for you?
Well, it's not necessarily broken people. It's people have issues, right? Like we're all imperfect in who we are, myself included, right? So every day I'm looking in the mirror saying, how can I be better? But when I prepare for a coaching session with the CEO or I'm working through a strategy with an HR team, it's really about meeting people where they are. You know, founder-based businesses, there's a bunch of individuals that show up imperfect and build these brilliant companies, and they're trying to lead through them with all their imperfections. And a lot of times I'm holding mirrors up, I'm coaching skills, I'm supporting them through, you know, horrible situations, not having enough cash to make payroll, or we're working on their cash plan. And I can't tell you how many times I've asked a CEO, does this same thing show up at home?
Oh,
And
wow.
I have a couch in my office, and I can tell you there's been some tears shed on that. You know, it's, we show up the same, you know, imperfectly at work and at home. So I feel like when I'm working on businesses and I'm working on their HR issues and I'm working with CEOs, I'm also working with their lives and people's lives. And so, yeah, it is, it's business for me, but it's also purpose and passion.
Well, one of the things you said that surprised me was that you have so many CEOs that say business would be so much better if I didn't have to deal with the employees. I just have to say that surprises me because I think, in my mind, if you want to be a great leader, you have to figure out how to take some of these dysfunctional people and get them all moving in the right direction. You know, you agreeing on your own to do something, you're never going to be great. You'll never be great operating by yourself. I don't know. That's just my take. So that surprised me when
Well,
you said that.
let me be clear. They don't say that every day, all day long. They say it when employee issues are flared up, when their CFO is misrepresenting financials, or their best salesperson leaves for a competitor. That's when they say stuff like that. They build their companies. You know, I work with amazing CEOs, like really, really passionate, heartfelt. I won't work for people that are jerks. And you know, I care a lot about character because that really drives culture and the values and our ability to be successful. So the people I work with have strong passion for what they do and for the people and the families they support. And sometimes that causes the hurts to be worse when someone violates them or violates their company or affects issues or leaves to go to a competitor. It hurts more. And so that's when they make the comments like, gosh, I wish I didn't have employees. They're lying. It's just the moment. But it's the reality of what I coach them through.
Yeah, and you know, when you were talking about the hurt, I grew up in a small town and my dad had a business there. And he had one guy, he had a business partner, And they had one guy that was, an associate, basically the third highest position in the company. You had the two partners, and then this guy, and I ran into him at Walmart or something one day when I was back visiting. And I said, "Oh, I saw Bill, blah, blah, blah." And I saw him and I said, "He was acting pretty weird." And my dad was like, "Yeah, he should act weird." I'm like, "Really? Why?" And he said, "Well, he ran a surveying crew. He was in charge of all the surveying." And he said he started taking the company vehicles, the company equipment, and the company employees and running a business of his own inside the company. And he corrupted the employees by getting them to fill up their personal cars with gasoline using the company credit card, so he had dirt on them. And he said, and then he, so I fired him and he left and he started competing company down the street, violating his non-compete. And so I went after him and he said, "Well, you can come after me, but do you know that your business partner has done this, 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 and this? And I have the proof, and that's going to come out." And I just look at that. And my dad, when you said they felt betrayed, he felt completely betrayed. He had helped this guy build an amazing career. But the thing that was so sad was there was a little bit of corruption. I think I heard you hinting at this earlier. There was a little bit of corruption in the organization that was left undealt with. And that ended up becoming a cancer that cost my dad who knows how much money.
It's just that inexcusable behavior, and I help a lot of companies hire people, and we use tools like Culture Index and, really good top grading processes to hire. But you don't always know what people bring to work in terms of character, right? You can interview the heck out of culture and whatnot, but it's when, when iron rubs iron that you find out who the real character is and in a person. And so it is shocking, as a CEO myself and coaching CEO, some of the stories that I hear where you think you hired an A player, amazing person, and there's just something not right. And when that happens, a lot of times CEOs will blame themselves for making a bad selection or, beat themselves up for not seeing it earlier. And sometimes there is process issues and there could have been more time spent hiring. But I remind CEOs a lot, it's oftentimes a company, it's a microcosm of society. You're gonna have bad people sneak in sometimes. And sometimes people become bad because of situations they're dealing with outside, right? Like financial stress or whatever. But it is very violating to the CEO. These are people they chose to be on their team and entrusted. And the more senior they are, obviously, the more trust that's built. You're expecting those executives to carry your culture, to protect your company, to engage with employees and train them around the right things. And what happened to your dad is just, it is criminal, but it's also just so disheartening for someone.
Well, and I think part of the pain was here's his business partner of many years who helped him grow the business. He finds out he's been doing some unethical things. And it just, yeah, all sorts of betrayal. It's, well, and I think companies bring it on themselves. I have an interview question that if somebody fails that question, and I'm not going to say what the question is on air, but because I want people to figure out, but if they fail that question, they don't come back from the interview. They will never be hired. And it's 100% focused on figuring out how ethical they are. And and Jack Welch learned a very expensive lesson. He had to fire a buddy of his, somebody who had been a good friend who was running one of his divisions, and he had to pay a $2 billion fine to the government for defrauding the US government. So he lost a friend and he lost a lot of money. He lost a little bit of a street cred.
And I think that's the hard part for CEOs because it's the personal violation, but it's also their credibility, right? Because they're doing it under the umbrella of your dad's company, as an example.
Well, and you know, this is a much smaller thing. I mean, I'm launching a chapter of a networking group. And I told my officers, I say, here's what we're looking for in the people joining. We're not looking for people who have a credit card and can pay. I said, if we let bad people in this networking group in, they will judge us. The people in the group will judge us for those choices.
Well, and that's a great coaching message that I give to my CEOs about lingering performance issues, right? Because there's a couple things that happen when you have an executive or a leader on your team that's not performing or violates your culture and you allow it. First of all, no B player or C player leader is ever going to be able to hire an A player team member. So by virtue of that leader's, lack of performance or lack of culture alignment, you're polluting that entire pond that reports to that leader. And then on top of that, you've got employees who look at you and say, "You tolerate this? I'm not working here. I'm out." Or, "I'm going to lower my standards to the level that I know you're accepting already." And so you've now just tarnished your entire culture and the world that all of your employees are showing up in, and therefore your brand, because those people are talking to customers every day. They're talking to their friends at a barbecue. There's a pretty vast impact on culture when you're tolerating poor performance or just not reacting to it. And I tell people culture is as much what you choose not to re react to or respond to or do as it is what's written on the wall or what you do.
Well, I mean, I had a client a number of years ago who had a sales guy that he was a little bit of a crook, and he wouldn't fire him, because he loved the revenue too much. They're not in business anymore.
Well, I just fired a client about 4 months ago that was my largest client. Great recurring revenue. I made a huge impact in his business, saved him over $1.3 million. And I fired him because he was not treating my team as partners and his behavior wasn't what I want my employees to have to deal with day to day. And I had talked to him two or three times, and I knew we were kicking butt and taking names, helping him increase value in his company. He was preparing for sale. And finally, the third time, I just said, "I can't keep tolerating this. It's affecting my credibility and my team, and I'm not going to continue to do it. So this will be our last month."
Good for you. And I think what that does, I think that really that sends a powerful message to your team, especially when they know it's a very valuable client. And that creates a special kind of loyalty amongst your employees. And kind of going back to the team, I'm just thinking about the people problems, and that, everybody has people problems. And we're going to bring it back to basketball as well. But somebody that really impresses me, and I'm not a huge sports fan, but I see some things that fascinate me. And one was the Chicago Bulls with Phil Knight coaching. You look at the people he pulled together, how he got anybody to play with Dennis Rodman. Blows my mind. I mean, you wouldn't talk about somebody has it. The guy wouldn't show up for, he wouldn't show up for practice. He did all sorts of things.
Yeah, when I ran the legal department and the HR department and the tech department, the Suns, he would have been a spectacle. I had to deal with all of the childcare issues and the spousal issues and the partying and the handlers of all the players. He would have been a tough case for sure.
But Phil, I mean, Phil somehow figured out how to get him to play as a member of the team.
And buy into the culture a little bit and make sure the rest of the team could deal with him. I mean, to put it blunt, right? Like he's not an easy teammate, I'm sure.
And you have Michael Jordan, who's like maybe the best ever, and who could demand who he wanted to play with. I mean, it's just absolutely stunning. But I do believe I do believe that if anybody wants to be a great leader, you have to be able to lead. And part of leadership is kind of bringing this back to what you were talking about. You have people that have issues, and you have to figure out how to deal with those.
Yeah, and you have to decide what your breaking point is, right? Like, I'm sure Phil would have not tolerated certain things out of Rodman, for example, you know, if it really was affecting the team in a horrible way and he couldn't keep the wrapper around his culture and the performance of the team, he would have made the tough decisions, and I think ultimately did, right? But I think with leadership, I talk to my CEOs all the time about how do we level up? How do we level you up so you can level up the next level, so you can level up the next level? It's all about highest and best use. And a lot of times that comes down to that leader at the next higher level. Are they freeing that person up to be stretched and grown? And are they putting people in the right seats? I can't tell you how many times we've got people in jobs where they're just stressed out, and you spend the majority of your life at work. If you're stressed out and hate your job and you're a high performer and you just know you're not in the right seat, man, get them into a place where they can be successful. And it takes a lot to know the difference between is this person a bad performer or is this person in the wrong seat? And I put that responsibility squarely on the leader to be able to assess that. And we use tools, like I said, Culture Index and some others that help identify how is this person wired? What are they great at? And I use the Hedgehog Principle with Jim Collins to talk about what are you passionate about? What are you really skilled at? Where can you add the most value? That pertains to a company, but it also pertains to people. And if you can get people in the right seats with the right skill sets, dialed around something they're passionate about, man, your productivity goes up like 50 knots.
And looking at Phil Knight, he took some very disparate players and pulled them together and won championships again and again and again. Michael couldn't do it by himself. Jordan could not do it by himself.
Well, other teams tried to take him down singularly, right? So he needed to have wingmen. He needed to have people that were strong around him because you can put four people or five people on defense against one guy if that's all you need to do. There's no chance he's going to score, right? So you got to make sure you're surrounded by a team that spreads that wealth and really affects the growth. And that's what good CEOs do too.
So let's wrap up on this. So there's just I've heard it. I've worked for some smaller companies where they said, we're kind of at that point. It's a necessary evil. We need to bring in HR, and we need to have somebody from HR. I think there's a perception that HR is the school marms. They're there to tell you what you can't do. And but you talk about it as a growth factor. Help me understand that.
Well, I think the challenge that founders have is that first HR hire, they need a unicorn, and there isn't a unicorn. They need someone who's awesome at HR strategy, that understands the operational levers, that can recruit the lights out and get the best people, that can manage all the compliance and employee relations issues, and you'll never get that in your first person. And so, what we like to do is help them find a person that can kind of manage the house, manage the compliance, the employee relations, the payroll, the processes. And we come in as a partner to the CEO with a blended team for projects or whatever gaps they've got. And really look under the hood of their people operations and even their operations in terms of are you delivering product and services on time? Usually that stems back to do we have the right people? Do we have the right metrics? Do we have the right systems? Do we have the right hiring process? There's so much leakage on the people side of the business, not just in expense management, but just how much lost opportunity we have serving clients. And so I love when we get to come into a team and coach up a junior HR person or be a full HR team for founder-based companies because, man, the lights go on. We're not the police officer. We're not the school marm anymore. We're a critical element to them as much as their CFO and their head of sales and biz dev. And that juices me. I get really, really amped about that because I see the dollars when they sell these companies.
Yeah. Well, I love that. And it's, I think there's probably a lot of people out there that need what you bring. How can they reach you?
I think the best thing is find us on our website. It's onptbiz.com. You can find me on Google if you wanted to. And then we're also going to offer HR well check for anybody that would like to really look at how is my HR function working and what gaps do I have. And I'll spend some time with you personally walking you through it.
Well, excellent. Well, Dan, thank you for coming on Leaders and Legacies. This has been awesome.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you, Craig.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.